Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, 5th Chapter, Text 6. Yata puna sveka idam nevesha. Yata puna sveka idam nevesha. Shete guhayam sa nivritta vritti. Te guyayam sa nivritta vritti. Yogeshvara dishvara eka etad. Yogeshvara dishvara eka etad. Anupravishto bahudo yatashit. Anupravishto bahuda yatashit. Yata puna sveka idam nivesha. Shete guhayam sa nevritta vritti. Yogeshvara dishvara eka etad. Anupravishto bahuda yatashit. Others? Madhujis, Vaishnavis, sorry. Oh, I was wondering what happened. I didn't think there was to be that few chanters, so we're great. And due to technical difficulties beyond our control, here we go. Okay. All right, so we'll have to continue. Yata, as much as, puna, again. Sve, in his. Ke, form of space. Virat Rupa. Idam, this. Nivesha, entering into. Sete, lies down. Guhayam, within the universe. Sa, he, the personality of Godhead. Nivritta, without endeavor. Vritti, means of livelihood. Yoga Ishvara, the master of all mystic powers. Adishvara, proprietor of everything. Ekaha, one without a second. Etat, this. Anupravishta, entering afterwards. Bahuda, by innumerable. Yata, as much as. Asit, exists. Okay, Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. This is Maitreya speaking. Maitreya Muni speaking. He lies down on his own heart, spread in the form of the sky, and thus placing the whole creation in that space, he expands himself into many living entities, which are manifested as different species of life. He does not have to endeavor for his material maintenance, because he is the master of all mystic powers and the proprietor of everything. Thus, he is distinct from the living entities. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The questions regarding creation, maintenance, and destruction, which are mentioned in many parts of the Srimad Bhagavatam, are in relation to different millenniums, kalpas. A kalpa, by the way, is a day of Lord Brahma. And therefore, they are differently 4.3 billion years long. And therefore, they are differently described by different authorities when questioned by different students. There is no difference regarding the creative principles of the Lord's control over them, yet there are some differences in the minute details because of different kalpas. The gigantic sky is the material body of the Lord called the Virat Rupa, and all material creations are resting on the sky or on the heart of the Lord. Therefore, beginning from the sky, the first material manifestation, the first material manifestation to the gross vision, down to the earth, everything is called Brahman. Sarvam kala vidam brahma. There is nothing but the Lord, and he is one without a second. The living entities are the superior energies, whereas matter is the inferior energy, and the combination of these energies brings about the manifestation of this material world, which is in the heart of the Lord. Om aginantam ananda shah jananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa gadamayam dirati swapadantikam. So we have here we have Maitreya. He's speaking to Vidura. Maitreya Muni was fortunate enough to be present when Lord Krishna was instructing Uddhava. So he's a highly exalted soul. And Vidura has been directed to inquire from him about topics about Lord Krishna. After he's just been hearing from Uddhava. And so we could think, okay, well, Vidura is very fortunate to be hearing from Maitreya because he's a highly exalted soul. But the thing is, Vidura is also a highly exalted soul. Vidura, as you remember from the first canto, he gave some amazing instructions to Dhritarashtra, which inspired Dhritarashtra to quit the palace and renounce and move forward in his spiritual life. And they were very impressive instructions. He's famous for those, actually. And aside from that, there's one incident, I don't think it's mentioned in the Bhagavatam, but it's in the Mahabharata, where Krishna was visiting, is it Hastinapur? He was visiting Hastinapur, I believe, yeah. And he was invited to have lunch at the home of Duryodhana. And he didn't accept the invitation. Duryodhana was the king, Krishna didn't accept his invitation, but he went to Vidura's home, and Vidura was like known as that he was a poor man, in comparison to these other personalities. He wasn't like a king or anything like that. I mean, he was shown a lot of respect there as part of the family. But anyway, he didn't have the same type of opulence. He wasn't able to offer the same type of reception. Nowhere is near what Duryodhana would have been able to offer. But Krishna was pleased to accept the luncheon invitation at the home of Vidura. And Vidura, when he was feeding Krishna, he was, just to give you an idea of who Vidura is, we know he's Yamaraj and he's, et cetera, and he's just coming and playing the role. I won't go into that whole story. But Vidura, when he was feeding Krishna, at one point he was in such ecstasy that he was giving Krishna bananas, and he was giving him, he was peeling the banana, and he was in so much ecstasy that he kind of lost track of what he was doing, and he was giving Krishna the peel as opposed to giving him the banana, and he wasn't aware of that. And Krishna accepted the peel, and I believe he nibbled on it or something. But the idea was he was in so much ecstasy, and that Krishna was very pleased with his association. So it could be the other way around. You know, here we have Vidura's inquiring from Maitreya. It could just as easily be Maitreya inquiring from Vidura. They're both like exalted, exalted. Is it still Vidura speaking? Oh, sorry. Okay, this is Vidura speaking. Yeah, you're right. He's inquiring. Okay. So in any event, point B is the same, that it's Vidura. He's inquiring from Maitreya. It could be Maitreya inquiring from Vidura. They're both highly elevated, exalted souls. And this is what these guys do, you know, these elevated devotees. There's a verse in the Bhagavad Gita, 10th chapter, goes, much chitta, mat gita prana, buddhayantas parashpanam, katayantas chamam nicham tushanti cha ramanti cha. Krishna is speaking there. He says, always chanting, how's it go? Chanting my glories, always absorbed in me. These great souls, they derive great satisfaction and bliss, enlightening one another and conversing about me. So this is what these great devotees do when they get together. They have like, you know, because they're fixed in the conclusion, you know, which Krishna mentions in the verse before that. Aham sarvasya prabhava matak sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvita. Krishna says, I am the source of all spiritual and material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So they've accepted that. You see, you know, that's like a foregone conclusion for them. And there they are. Their life is just to talk about Krishna. It's like, you know, like when somebody passes away, we have this memorial service and everybody gets together. And the purpose of that is to, you know, try to have invoke like a feeling of loving memory about that person. So different devotees will come up and they'll speak and they'll say, you know, their memory of the person in a way to try to inspire and invoke that, you know, a loving feeling about that person. So that's what devotees are doing their whole life. Of course, you know, the person they're talking about, Krishna, is not dead. He's the most alive always. But that's what they're doing, you know. They're coming together to talk about Krishna, you know, to do that, you know, to enliven each other in their devotional service. That's their life. You know, that's their whole life. It's like a lifelong memorial service. And Maitreya, he's probably very honored, you know, by the fact that Vidura, I don't know. It doesn't explicitly say that, you know, Maitreya knows who Vidura is. But, you know, these very elevated devotees, they can kind of sense, you know, he's not a new bhakta. So he's honored. He's honored that for the opportunity to kind of engage in Krishna Katha with Vidura, such an elevated soul. And so he's going to be trying very hard to infuse Vidura in devotional ecstasy, you see? And Vidura's desiring that as well. So that's the, you know, the beautiful thing about the exchange of devotees. That's actually the, you know, as I said, that's their whole life. And, of course, that's the purpose of the Srimad Bhagavatam class. You know, to try to infuse, the speaker's supposed to try to infuse the audience with devotional enthusiasm like that. And that's the purpose of the Krishna Conscious Movement. Prabhupada states that, you know, in the Back to Godhead magazine, there's, what is it, 7 purposes of ISKCON? That's one of the purposes, that the devotees should come together for the purpose of encouraging each other, enthusing each other in their devotional service. Because that's how it works. That's a principle of devotional service, as Krishna says, and as that verse I just quoted, buddhayantas parashpranam. Devotees derive great satisfaction and bliss enlightening one another and conversing about me. Why? Because Krishna's pleased when they do that. Krishna likes that. He's pleased by that. So when devotees get together and discuss the philosophy, trying to, you know, encourage each other in their devotional service and cement their understanding of the philosophy like that, Krishna's within the heart, and he's pleased by that, so he kind of enlivens them, and he lets them experience great satisfaction and bliss doing that. So somebody might ask the question, how does Vyasadeva, you know, because he's compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, how does he even know that this this conversation went on? It's being held in a secluded place. You know, they're off someplace near, kind of in the Himalayas there, in the general vicinity of Badari Gashram, you know, which is where that was Uddhava's next stop, so to speak. And so how does he even know? Doesn't say he's there. Well, by some supernatural process, you know, he's Trikalagya, he knows, okay? I'm not going to get into that. But the more important question would be, what's his motivation? Why is he included as part of the Srimad Bhagavatam? Well, the reason is because it's an opportunity for the conditioned souls to get in on the act, so to speak. You know, we heard in the previous purport, on Saturday's purport, let's see if I can find it really quickly. The material world says the material world is created for the illusory enjoyment of the conditioned souls who have been against the transcendental service of the Lord since time immemorial. So, some souls have had enough. There'll be some souls who, at some point, want out. And these literatures are created by Srila Vyasadeva to give those souls who have come to the conclusion that, okay, this doesn't work. I've had enough. Let me turn towards spiritual life. So this is their opportunity, coming in contact with these devotees, and if the association of these devotees is made more widespread by these literatures. You see, you're getting the association of Vidura, Maitreya, Uddhava, Narada Muni, Vyasadeva, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You're getting their association in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is a chance for that. And that's why these narrations are there. Or at least that's certainly why they're recorded. Because it's the great devotees sharing. They're sharing their, realizations, and Vyasadeva, out of his, causeless mercy on the conditioned souls, his compassion, he compiles this literature to give these conditioned souls like us previously and so many other people a chance. Now, talking about today's verse. So it seems like the sky that's being spoken about is the spiritual sky. Karana Dakshai Vishnu lies down on the spiritual sky, but it doesn't sound like that's what's being referred to here in today's purport, just from different things that are mentioned. It talks about the Virat Roop. But the I think that a big point I came away with upon reading the translation and reading the purport, I felt it was something that I was getting, not explicitly, but implicitly, like this, that there's a verse in the fifth chapter of the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. I don't know the whole Sanskrit, but there's a line, Idam hi vishvam bhagavan ivetado, that this material creation is not different from Krishna. And if you notice in the translation, Vidura uses the word heart, and Prabhupada picks up on that. And twice in the purport, Prabhupada uses the word heart. There's some connection. This whole material creation has been crafted very lovingly by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And there's a connection here between Krishna and the material world. It's created as, it's an outgrowth of his loving intentions. He has... even though we're here, it's like a prison. We heard, I think, in the Prabhupada's classes, it's a fort. But at the same time, Krishna has so much love for his parts and parcels, conditioned souls, that even when he sticks in the material world, he does a nice job. He makes a nice package there. It's a nice place, for us to learn our lessons and get reformed. So I think the usage of the word heart kind of reminded me of those ideas. And along those lines, I think it's meant for that purpose. It's not just, it's Krishna's intention, and he does a good job. I was reminded when I was reading this purport about something that I learned about years ago. The sixth astronaut to go to so-called go to the moon. Let's, for argument's sake, let's say they went to the moon, but they didn't experience the moon as it's described in the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's like somebody going to Vrindavan and not experiencing Vrindavan. It's not like just by buying a ticket and changing your geographical location, you're actually in Vrindavan. You have to do something. Something else has to happen. And so in the same way, possibly that's one understanding of how they didn't... Prabhupada said many things about on this subject, but one understanding is, okay, they didn't. They maybe physically went to the moon, but they certainly didn't experience the moon mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam. But that's aside from the point, in one sense. But So this guy, Edgar Mitchell, is his name. He was the sixth astronaut, supposedly, you know, sixth astronaut who supposedly went to the moon. On the voyage back, he had a what they referred to as a transformational experience. He was seeing the Earth as leaving the moon, coming back to the Earth, and he was so overwhelmed by what he was seeing. He had like an epiphany that, wait a second, there's something more here than just, you know, there's something spiritual about this whole thing. That basically, I mean, putting it in my own words, and it was like an overwhelming experience for him. See, so nature has that effect. I mean, you know, he had it on a trip back from the moon. You could have it if you go out in the morning and just watch the sunrise, or go for a drive down the, you know, the 101 or something like that. It's incredible. You know, Krishna's done an amazing job on this cosmic manifestation, and it's actually meant to inspire, you know, those kind of feelings. It's like a freebie. You know, it's just something to get everybody started on their spiritual life. So that's what's, you know, going on here. And then, and I think Prabhupada, you know, while giving us, stating Vedic conclusions, you know, like Sarvam Kalavidam Brahma and et cetera, he's simultaneously trying to, you got to read between the lines. When you read Prabhupada's purports and Vedic literature in general, it's a good idea. You know, you read it, there's the information, but then there's the feeling, there's the bhav that's trying to be conveyed through it. And I think that's what's going on here. At least that's the effect it had on me when I was reading it, that, you know, it's trying to instill and invoke an appreciation of the, you know, the purpose behind the creation, the purpose, you know, to give the conditioned souls an opportunity to, you know, to rekindle, revive their spiritual life again. And in the last sentence of the translation, Vidura speaking here, so he makes the statement, thus he, referring to Krishna, he is distinct from the living entities. Well, that could be the understatement of the eternity, you know, for that matter. Krishna is really distinct from the, you know, the ordinary living entities. This isn't something that, you know, it's not some sort of like new idea that he just stumbled upon 5,000 years ago when he said that. That idea has been kicking around for a long time, how Krishna is distinct, to say the least, from all the other living entities. Right back in the dawn of creation, you know, we have that prayer by Lord Brahma, the Brahma Samhita. And Prabhupada gave a little address when he, you know, explaining that. And I think he referred to it as being from the dawn of creation. Remember that phrase, the dawn of creation? Yeah. So that's a long time ago. I mean, at minimum, if he did it at the beginning of this day, it's about 2 billion years ago. But if he did it at the beginning of his lifetime, that's about 150 trillion years ago. It's a long time ago. So anyway, this idea has been around for a long time, that Krishna is distinct from the other living entities. So in that prayer, Brahma Samhita, we only have the fifth chapter, unfortunately. But the first verse of the fifth chapter of Lord Brahma Samhita goes, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. And I'm going to sort of analyze that a little bit, but I'm going to start from the third line, you know, in an attempt to amplify what Vidura is saying here about Krishna being distinct from all living entities. So the third line is Anadir Adir Govinda, which means that Krishna is the beginning. He doesn't have a beginning. There's nothing before Krishna. He doesn't have any beginning. He is the beginning. He's the beginning of everything, okay? But he's a lot more than that. He's more than that. It's like sometimes, mundane example. Once I went to buy a motorhome, and this lady was showing me this motorhome, and I didn't like it, and she kind of turned me on to some other possible ones that I might like, and she said, of course you're going to give me a finder's fee, right, if you wind up. I said, oh, yeah, sure. Because Krishna doesn't just begin the thing. He doesn't just start the ball rolling and then opt out. He's, you know, and I'll take my finder's fee, and okay, good luck, everybody. See you. No. He is the beginning, but he's a lot more than that. He's the beginning of everything. He has no beginning, but then he hangs in there, and he sarva karana karana. See, so Krishna's beginning, he has no beginning, but Krishna hangs in there and creates everything else. So he's the cause of everything else. So he's the beginning, he doesn't have any beginning, he's the cause of everything else. That's significant. Now, and once again, he doesn't opt out there. You know, he doesn't get to say, well, okay, I've done my work. I started everything, and I've developed everything, and now I'm off to, no. The third line is Anadya Radya Govinda, and then the next line is Sarva Karana Karanam. Jumping back up to the first line, Ishvara Parama Krishna. So Krishna's the beginning. He has no beginning. He's the cause of everything. And on top of that, Ishvara Parama Krishna. He's the supreme controller. So he's sticking around to make sure everything goes the way it's supposed to go. He's the beginning. He has no beginning. He brings everything into creation. And he's sticking around. He doesn't just... to make sure everything goes the way it's supposed to go. Ishvara Parama Krishna. And, in case it wasn't obvious to everybody, Lord Brahma goes, Satchidananda Vigraha. That it's not just some impersonal force that's doing all this, or some whatever. It's the eternal form of blissful knowledge. That's pretty amazing. You know, Krishna's like, I mean, that's pretty amazing that there's a person. That's what Lord Brahma is saying here. There's a person. He's the eternal. He's not just an ordinary flesh and bones person, obviously. He's the eternal form of blissful knowledge. And that's what he's doing all. That's the beginning of, with no beginning, the cause of everything. And the person that's, you know, making sure it's all going the way it's supposed to go. The eternal form of blissful knowledge. That's pretty amazing. Now, you could say, okay, well, okay, it is pretty amazing, but Krishna must be pretty worn out because, I mean, to be the person who's the supreme controller in charge of everything and ultimately responsible for everything, that's a pretty heavy job. He must really be, like, stressing out and needing a vacation or just, you know. But no, this, as far as this material creation goes, you know, Krishna does it with his eyes closed, literally. What's that verse? Yes, Shaik and Eva Satmik. How does it go? Such an annoying. Yes, Shaik and Eva Satmik. That went from the Brahma Samhita, where it talks about how Mahavishnu is lying on the ocean there. That verse. So it describes, thank you. It describes how Krishna expands as Mahavishnu, Karanadakshai Vishnu. He lies down on the causal ocean. And he doesn't get hard to work. He doesn't, you know, okay, like a guy in a room with a bunch of computer monitors around him, and let me figure this out. No, he just lies down on the causal ocean, and he's in his mystic slumber, and in his sleep, he's exhaling all the universes. He's, you know, he's doing it while in his sleep. You see? So it's not like he's not sweating it. Well, he is kind of sweating it, but his sweat produces all the universes. So it's not a, you know, it's not a tough one for Krishna. And you can say, well, yeah, but okay, that's Mahavishnu, but Krishna back behind the scenes, he's got a tough job. He's, you know, it's like sometimes these days in the last 20 years they developed this thing where you might have seen the police, they wear this like an earphone, and also they use that in sports too, and that's a quarterback will have one in his ear, and the coach is on the sidelines with one, and he can kind of like tell him what plays to do and this and that. But Krishna's not doing that. He doesn't have to be like, he's not like there having to watch everything that Mahavishnu does and, you know, coach him every, no. You know, Mahavishnu, Krishna's off enjoying, as we heard this morning, in the reading this morning from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna's off dancing with the gopis and, you know, giving preferential treatment to Radharani when she demands it and things like that. He's really enjoying himself. You know, he's not like, as I said, it's not like he's sweating it, you know. He's having a good time. And so that's, you know, the amazing position of Krishna. Now, the take home from this is more than just that, wow, Krishna is really inconceivable. That is part of it. That's part of it. We should be feeling like, wow, Krishna is really amazing and inconceivable. Yeah, and that's there. But for us, another important thing is, and I'm going to lead into this, but you know that there's that pastime where Dhruva Maharaj, in the fourth canto, he wanted to sit up on the lap of his father. And his father was being influenced by his second wife, his co-wife, or Dhruva Maharaj's stepmother, and because of that, he wasn't allowed to. And his feelings really got badly hurt. That was the essence of the thing. His feelings got really badly hurt. Because he was a Kshatriya, his father was the emperor, he was a Kshatriya, and the way he went on from that. He wanted to get some like kind of a revenge, you know, by getting a kingdom greater than his father's, greater than his grandfather, greater than his great grandfather. But the thing, the essence of it was his feelings were really hurt. So initially he went to his mother and he was crying and he was kind of really like angry at the same time and touch your spirit and all. And she told him, she said, I can't help you. I can't help you, son. I'm sorry. I'm the wife who's not in favor and but she had to try to sell Dhruva something, you know, because she was the mother and she wanted to do something to help. She said, look, you know, the only person that could help you is Krishna. He said, when you experience Krishna's so kind to his devotees that the kindness, the combined, Prabhupada, it's not, this is in the Prabhupada's purport, he says, it's not in the translation, but he says, his mother told Dhruva that when you experience the kindness of Krishna, you'll experience the combined kindness of millions of affectionate mothers, you know, that Krishna is so kind to his devotees. So that's the point. That's the point. You know, yeah, Krishna is super inconceivable and like that, but, you know, as devotees, we have to remember that Krishna is the only one that could patch us up. Krishna is the one that could make us whole. You know, whatever frustration, aggravation, disappointment, disillusionment, guilt, keep going. You know, whatever despair, whatever negative emotions or negative things you're experiencing in your life, even as devotees, those experience those things sometimes. Krishna's the one who can make it, turn it all around, and make us whole, and you know, make us proper human beings, proper spirit souls. That's Krishna. You know, Krishna's the one who could patch us up and put us back together again. And so that's an important thing to remember. So following on from that, our mood should be, our attitude should be, that the most important thing in our life is just we want to please Krishna. You know, we want to please Krishna. We want to please Krishna. We want to please the spiritual master because that's our salvation. You know, that's what's going to make our life perfect and right. So, and yesterday we heard that. And, you know, Prabhupada's class, he made that point. He said, anything you do, you know, he didn't say it in these exact words, but the gist of it was Prabhupada was saying anything. At one point, he said, anything you do which is devoid of a motive to please Krishna, it's Shrama Evahi Kevalam. And he quoted that verse, Dharma Svanustita Pumsam Vikshvakshena Katashya Napadayad Yadhiratam Shrama Evahi Kevalam. It's a useless waste of time. It's useless labor. And then he went on to say that, and he quoted, and he asked for the verse because he wasn't remembering it at first. What's that verse? You know, and the devotees gave him, I think, the first line, Atak Pumbhya Dvija Sreshta Vanashrama Vibhagasha Svanustitasya Dharmasha Sam Siddhir Hari Toshanam. And then Prabhupada made the point that the most important thing was somehow or another, you know, that's the perfection of all the occupational duties of all the varnas and the ashramas is just to please the Supreme Lord Hari. So that's, you know, that's it. We have to, you know, understanding all these different things, that should be our thing. When we wake up in the morning, our prayer should be, my dear Lord, please help me. Please give me the intelligence. Please give me whatever I require. I want to please you, so please help me do that. I want to achieve your favor. Just please give me the brains, the intelligence, the sensitivity, whatever it's required. Please help me. That's my mission. That's what I want to do. I want you to be pleased with me. That's it. You know, if we have to think like that, pray like that, desire like that, strive like that, and that's the perfection of our life. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any question? Particularly new people, new bhaktas or guests? No, questions from new bhaktas and guests. We're trying to give, you know, the No, your name is Amla Bhakta, not Nuevo Bhakta. Any questions from Bhaktas? Yeah, okay. Bhakta Rico.
What was the pastime about how...
Speak loud, okay? Loud and clear so I can...
Okay. When you said pastime when someone went to his mom... And I'll just make a little commentary. She said she can't help him, right? Is it because he didn't know how that she could help, or was it because she literally didn't not have any type of,
Okay, it's a twofold. I get the question. It's a twofold answer. One, materially, she felt like, I can't do anything for you because, you know, your father has two wives. And the other wife, her name was Suniti, which means pious. And the other's name's wife was Suruchi. She was beautiful. She was younger. She was beautiful. She was the one who the father, her husband, was paying more attention to. She felt like very much neglected and that he didn't really care about her. She felt, I don't have any material influence. But she did give him some very valuable spiritual instruction. She told him, you know, when he asked, where is this Krishna? Where is God? She said, well, the great sages, and they go to the forest to find him there. And on her inspiration or direction, he did that. He did that. And actually, thank you for asking that question, because I'll jump ahead. When it was time for Dhruva Maharaj to go back to Godhead, and the Vishnu Dutas came in an airplane for him, a transcendental airplane from the Vaikuntha planets, and I can't remember if he actually expressed it verbally, if he was just thinking. His thought was, what about my mother? I can't just leave my mother behind. You know, she was too helpful to me and everything. He was very indebted to his mother, and he didn't forget his mother. And then just at that, I said, once again, I can't remember if they told him or if another airplane appeared, right? A second airplane appeared, and he understood that, okay, my mother's getting to go back too. That's now I can go back in good conscience. Yeah. That's how it happened. Okay, so that's an important point too. Yeah, so am I supposed to stop here or continue or what? Okay, so we can take a... Okay, quick comment, because we have other people who want to make a comment. Quick comment. That's good.
If I have to look at you, it will definitely be quick. You made a nice point, and I want to thank you for a very wonderful class, but especially the point that you made, which was how we are to pray, especially in the morning when we wake up and we look at the sky, we look at the sun, we look at so many things that we have, and we give thanks to these, and we beg for the mercy to be able to be to gain the things that we need in order to better serve to the Lord. So that's fine, and that should be done. But it's not a one-shot thing. It's not you do it once and that's it. No, no. It goes on all day.
Right.
Why? Because Krishna says so. Always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me. Worship me and offer your homage unto me. Thus completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. So he tells how to come to him. By being absorbed. And how do you become absorbed? As you were just mentioning, showing dependence. When you want to be a lord, you don't depend. You independ. Do this, do that. You do this, do that. But when you actually realize you have defects, you have limitations, you have inferiorities, you make mistakes like that, once we realize that as a result of that, many difficulties, trials, tribulations, problems, explosions occur. So knowing that possibility, we beg the Lord, not that we should be free of anything and everything, but we should have him with us always as we deal with the different situations which come upon us. If we're always thinking of him, we feel strong, we feel peaceful, we feel enlivened, we feel eager. But if we don't have him, or we don't think of him, or we think, I can do it, you feel the opposite, and you fail. Or if you don't fail, even that is a failure, if you don't do it with Krishna's love.
Thank you. Okay, we'll stop there. Granthi Raja Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sorry, if all the brahmacharis and book distributors could remain just for a minute, we're going to take a picture. Okay, so if everybody's a brahmachari or what? Ananda Kirtan will be taking a picture of the brahmacharis and the book distributors, if they could just remain for a minute.